First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
For many American companies, there is now a new reality for workers. Get vaccinated or get tested. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this hour, your questions answered about getting the shot or the test on the job. Let us know what you think about this and your questions about your workplace. 549-2937. Then later in the hour, the Jags go down at their first regular preseason game. Our Josh Torres has the recap. But first this hour, millions of Americans will soon be affected by President Joe Biden's new vaccine requirements for the workplace. There is a six-point plan to end the pandemic the White House has put out, but here's the bottom line for people at the office. If you work for a company that has 100 or more employees, you will soon be expected to either get vaccinated or undergo weekly testing for COVID-19. Both workers and employers have many questions about these new requirements, particularly as more unvaccinated people are starting to return to the office. A new CNN SSRS poll shows more than half of Americans now say they do support requiring vaccinations for office workers coming back to the workplace, and also for students attending in-person classes in college and people attending sporting events or concerts. So let's begin the hour with a closer look at all this. We're pleased to welcome back to the show employment attorney Tyler White. He's principal and litigation manager of the local office of the Jackson Lewis firm. Hey, Tyler.
How are you, Melissa? Thanks for having me.
Already getting lots of calls, 549-2937, as we talk about getting vaxxed or tested at work, people. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax. So, Tyler, the federal government under OSHA does have broad powers to regulate health and safety in the workplace. Tell us what the law says, what this new mandate will require.
Well, that's right, Melissa. Look, President Biden's COVID-19 action plan makes one thing clear. This administration doesn't intend to simply ignore the COVID-19 virus and hope it goes away. This plan, as you said earlier, will affect nearly 80 million Americans. It is sweeping in scope. And, you know, it hasn't gone into effect yet, because what is going to happen is President Biden, through the plan that he issued, has basically given a directive to OSHA to implement what's called an emergency temporary standard. And so that should be forthcoming in the next couple of weeks. It could take more than a month. It just depends. We never know. And that will essentially set the standards and the guidelines for employers to use in, for example, testing weekly if individuals choose not to get vaccinated. And it'll have some timetables and timelines that are set up in effect. But right now there are a few unknowns as far as how that's going to actually be implemented until those that standard is actually rolled out.
And in addition to companies, most health systems that take federal funding, they will now have vaccination requirements. The Biden administration has also made it easier to get rapid COVID tests at cost. There's a lot in this new order. But let me ask you, Tyler, many U.S. companies have already introduced vaccine requirements for the workplace, correct?
They have, particularly larger employers. You know, in this case, this applies to employers with more than 100 employees, and that's not by work site, by the way. That's by the employer as a whole. So if you work at a work site that only has a few employees, but you're part of a larger organization that has over 100 employees in it, this is going to apply to you.
Okay. Now, some companies may balk at this. They may sue. What are their chances in court?
I don't think very good, but I will say that, you know, our Governor Ron DeSantis, for example, has already indicated he intends to fight it. He said on Friday he was going to get the Florida legislature involved, as opposed to just what he called just a simple lawsuit. I don't know what that means yet, but you can see that Florida may try to fight the vaccination or test requirement. I don't see it as being very successful, however.
Can you explain why? Because as I mentioned, the Occupational Health and Safety Administration, with legislation I believe that was first passed under President Nixon, has very broad powers to oversee health and safety in the workplace. And I believe also there's a surprisingly strong series of rulings from the Supreme Court on this that allow the government to require vaccinations. Can you talk more about that?
Sure. There's a landmark case dating all the way back to 1905, and it's protected vaccine mandates. And essentially the idea is that the government, and again, this was before OSHA, obviously, but the government is permitted to take the public health and safety into account whenever it issues things like these mandates.
Okay. So, you know, this is something that I mentioned, Tyler, that a majority of Americans support, about 55%. There is, however, a very vocal minority of Americans who's outraged by this. What's your message to them?
Well, I think the outrage comes probably from the initial messaging. You might see a headline that says Biden issues vaccination mandate, and it leaves out the or you can show a negative weekly test requirement. So I think it's like anything. It's, it's highly politicized for whatever reason. But there are alternatives. No one is forcing anyone to get a shot that they don't want to take. I think that's the major takeaway. This is not a pure vaccine mandate, and it shouldn't be called that. I think you referred to it probably correctly at the beginning. Vax or test, that's what this is.
So if you test positive, theoretically you'd be told by your employer to quarantine, and you wouldn't be required to get vaccinated after getting sick with COVID, but you would be told you can't come into work while you're positive. It does give employers more of a framework to keep COVID positive workers isolated.
That's correct.
Okay. And it's 549-2937. Where do you stand on new vaccine or testing requirements at your job? Give us a call. Lots of tweets meanwhile. Here's a really good one from John. Won't anti-vaxxers just claim religious exemptions? You know, that is something that is legal in a number of states, including Florida, Tyler. You can claim a religious or philosophical exemption to vaccination for your children, for example, for them to go to school. So what about that? Is that a legal loophole that we may see used?
It is something that we have seen with the employers who have already issued vaccination mandates. And certainly a religious exemption is something that even under Biden's plan, he has said they will consider. They will consider medical exemptions. But I think what it goes back to, the accommodation for those exemptions is simply to show a negative COVID test weekly. There's nothing I think that a religious exemption would qualify for that would get you out of having to show a negative COVID test every week.
And let's say an employee refuses the weekly test. As an employment attorney, what advice do you have for the employee or the employer?
Sure, yeah. So if employers allow an employee not to get vaccinated, under this plan, not to get vaccinated and do not require those employees to show a negative COVID test weekly and keep those records that they've required that, then the employer, because that's what this is about, this is not penalties from the government on employees, the employer would face penalties from OSHA of up to $14,000 per violation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, everywhere I've ever worked, you go into the little break room and there is some document tacked up on the bulletin board laying out all of the OSHA requirements for keeping the workplace safe. Employers are required to post those. They're required to do what OSHA says. And certainly companies violate OSHA regulations all the time, but there is law about this. So can you educate folks on why most employers will fall in line with this? I know I asked you this a moment ago, but can we get a little bit more in the weeds about this? Why most large companies, they don't want to run afoul of this agency?
Well, typically, you know, when you think of OSHA, you think of workplace safety from the standpoint of, you know, do we have a leaky roof? Is there asbestos here? Is there a noxious gas emanating from some part of the factory I'm working at? But OSHA can come in kind of unannounced and initiate investigations at employer work sites. And this would fall under that. So OSHA could come into an employer's work site after this is all implemented, and they could say, show me the records where, you know, I need to see a list of all your employees, and show me the records where either they're vaccinated or they've been showing you on a weekly basis that they have a negative COVID test. And if you don't have it, then they could fine you $14,000 per violation, up to $14,000.
And does OSHA have the manpower to do that?
Well, that's a question, too. I mean, I think the implementation into, you know, investigating, you know, reported incidents is going to be a question. And certainly, I would imagine under his plan, President Biden intends to provide more funding to OSHA to implement and enforce these requirements. But typically, OSHA is not going to know a company is not complying unless an employee, an aggrieved employee, says, hey, I'm vaccinated, or I'm showing a negative COVID test every week, but the 10 other people in this other department, I know they're not having to do that. Mm. And so they might call up OSHA, an employee might call up OSHA and kind of rat out an employer. And then the OSHA would have to go to that employer essentially and investigate.
Let's go to your calls now. If you work at a company with 100 or more employees, the Biden administration says you will have to soon become vaccinated or undergo weekly tests. What are your questions for Tyler White? He's an employment attorney with Jackson Lewis here in Jacksonville. 549-2937. Dennis in Pontevedra. Hi, Dennis. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. I absolutely love your show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I'm just curious. When the CDC puts out a number and says that the Delta variant is 1,000 times more transmissible, so that number just flew over everybody's head, basically, because that's incredible that a virus could be 1,000 times more transmissible than the already contagious alpha variant. So my question is to the people who have had this, been exposed to it, and recovered and gotten better and present the antibodies and maybe had it once or twice in their families, to those people, I know that some people are affected horribly and get really ill, but to the majority of the people that have had this and been exposed to it and recovered fine, as this virus becomes a seasonal illness in the next couple of years and sort of is defanged by natural transmission or by the vaccine, I'm trying to understand the rush to do this, to try and have this sweeping overhaul where everybody gets vaccinated, because 90% of the people have already had this and gotten better and had no symptoms or got a little sick, but they...
Well, I don't know if 90% of Americans have had it, Dennis, but,
yeah,
you know, let
yeah,
me ask, but let me ask Tyler your question.
Let me just say one more thing. When the CDC says it's 1,000 times more transmissible, that they would have had more of an impact if they would have said it was twice as contagious, because then everybody would have took notice. But when you say 1,000 times more transmissible, that means everybody has it, okay?
So, all right, Dennis. Let me put your question to Tyler. Tyler, let's talk about the rationale behind the Biden administration deciding to do this and those who will push back and say, well, what if I've already had the virus and recovered? Why should I have to become vaccinated?
Yeah, well, I mean, this administration's attitude, and it's quite frankly mirrors the CDC's attitude in most, if not the clearly the majority of health experts say, getting vaccinated is the way to prevent further infection and further transmission, quite frankly, of the infection. And nothing stops someone from getting COVID twice. I think that's that is a misconception that if you've had COVID, you've got the antibodies, you're safe from getting it and you're safe from transmitting it. That is not the case, according to the public health experts. So the reason for this plan is because there are a majority of Americans that have now gotten vaccinated, and they would like to remain safe in the workplace. And so the reason to do this is to stop the spread and the transmission and the continued infection, which the Delta variant has unfortunately brought upon us.
Right. The previous caller said he felt like the CDC wasn't explaining well how transmissible the Delta variant is. Well, it's more transmissible. It's more deadly. People continue to die and become hospitalized because of this virus, primarily unvaccinated people who've died unnecessarily. And they are filling up hospitals. They're preventing people with other medical problems from getting treatment. So that also has put an enormous strain on the healthcare system. Let's go to Denise in Arlington. Hi, Denise. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello. How are you?
Okay. Thanks. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Okay. My particular comment is just that I really want to get the vaccine because I work in healthcare, and I know eventually I have to, but I just really want to wait until the numbers are out there for it to be truly safe and to know what the true side effects and complications that can arise from taking the vaccine. It's just too new.
Well, so the FDA approval beyond the Pfizer vaccine, that's not enough for you?
No, ma'am. I like the research that happens over time, because most other vaccines, I want to say from my research I've done, it took more than like 2 years to develop all the other vaccines that like babies.
Well, it's actually a misperception many Americans have that the technology behind this vaccine was developed rapidly. It was developed over a period of almost 20 years. The mRNA spike protein mechanism that the vaccine uses to inoculate you against the virus, that research was conducted over decades. It had been in development for many years.
And I totally agree with it. Like I said, I'm a medical professional, but I want the research to show how it's been impacting the individuals that's taken it. I want to know what that research says, because I just don't want to end up with like Guillain-Barré syndrome, and that's something you can get from taking a vaccination.
Okay, Denise. So, Tyler, there are still millions of Americans like Denise, including people in the healthcare professions or work or somehow tied to a healthcare system in their job, who have put forth these kinds of arguments to delay getting vaccinated. The Biden White House is now basically saying no more of that. The hesitancy is taking too many lives. What about the arguments that Denise has?
Well, I think from everything I've seen, and obviously I'm not a doctor or an infectious disease expert, but from everything I've seen, it all comes down to a basic risk analysis. And the studies have shown from the people that have been vaccinated that the side effects, if any, from the vaccination are much less than if you were to get COVID. And that's the bottom line. I mean, there's less people that are affected or even die from taking a vaccine or getting some long-term illness from the vaccine than there are people dying and contracting long COVID and serious illness from COVID. But I think to the caller's point, to Denise's point, if she's not comfortable getting the vaccine, please keep in mind that this plan allows Denise to show a negative COVID test weekly, make sure she's not spreading the virus unnecessarily to her coworkers or to patients because she said she's in a healthcare setting. So I think that's important to keep a reminder on.
Yeah. Here's a tweet from a listener too. Jay tweets the show. Do we know if there's a mechanism to report noncompliance either from the employer or employees who are falsely claiming to be vaccinated? A reporting system.
a reporting system for false claims of vaccination. So I'm assuming...
Or non-compliance, that, like saying you're vaccinated if you're not. I mean, basically,
right.
Are employers going to have to demand that their employees show proof of vaccination? How will that be done? There are a lot of questions.
Yeah, there are questions about that. I mean, look, right now everyone has these cards, right? But we've heard about fake vaccination cards being passed around. Sure, employers, I believe, are going to have to see proof of vaccination, probably take a copy of the vaccination card. And, you know, as far as the fake vaccine cards that are being passed around, I think that the FBI, I think it was, I can't remember the agency that said that they were going to look into that as a crime. So if you want to report something like that, you could certainly call it into question through your employer. And, you know, if your employer wanted to see if the vaccine card was safe, I'm sure the employer could try to go down a path to working with the employee who submitted the allegedly false card.
You're forging a government document. I think it's a felony. Is it a felony?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be. It could be. So, you know, but outside of that, I mean, if you want to report an employer's noncompliance, for example, if an employee, told their employer, hey, I think so-and-so is submitting a fake vaccine card, nothing's done about it. Certainly OSHA is going to be the number that employee is going to be calling.
Carl in Avondale. Hi, Carl. How are you? Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about the requirement to do testing. So if it's vax or test, if we know that vaccinated individuals can still test positive, how does requiring testing of just unvaccinated individuals prevent the further spread of COVID in the workplace?
Thank you for that. Great question from Carl. Tyler.
Yeah, Carl is right. Absolutely. Vaccinated individuals can not only become infected, they can spread it to others. However, according to the CDC guidance that was just issued, you are less likely to become infected. I think it's like four or five times less likely to become infected with COVID as a vaccinated person. So that is the reason why vaccination is a potential option and a preventative measure.
There are still so many questions we weren't able to answer in the time we have you, but I want to thank you so much. Always good to get your insights about workplace law. He's Tyler White, Jackson Lewis Firm. Thanks, Tyler, and I'm sure we'll be coming back to you soon.
Thanks so much, Melissa.
Much more still ahead. Meanwhile, later, the Jaguars didn't get off to the best start in their first regular preseason game. Our Josh Torres has the low lights, as they say. But up next, fighting the state's eviction crisis. It's as simple as tasting a new IPA at Intuition Ale Works. That's next.
WJCT Public Media and the Florida Theater present Jimmy Vaughn, live at the WJCT Soundstage on Friday, September 24th, 2021 at 8 p.m. He will be bringing the blues to Jacksonville and performing his hits Six Strings Down, Dengue Woman Blues, Don't You Know, and more. Visit jacksmusic.org/events for tickets.
When you're sharing something, teachers say you need to bring enough for the whole class, right? Well, I'm Ari Shapiro, kicking off the school year with a little history. NPR is celebrating 50 years of broadcasting this year, 5 decades of news, conversations, and stories from around the world. And there's something for everyone, because sharing is kind of our thing. NPR, hear every voice.
Here on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Florida is dealing right now with an eviction crisis because a moratorium on evictions that was set up during the pandemic has come to an end. You can do your part to help out in the effort to keep people housed by simply buying a beer. For more, I spoke with Jim Kowalski, who heads up Jack's Area Legal Aid, and Ben Davis. He's owner at Intuition Aleworks. Jim Kowalski, Ben Davis. Guys, it's so good to talk to you both. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us. Thanks, Melissa.
Let's begin with you, Jim. Jacksonville Area Legal Aid has so much support in the community, which is so needed. Now you're getting some frothy support from Intuition Aleworks. This is cool. How did this whole thing come about?
So this is fantastic. I think we've narrowed our fundraising to sports, beer, and music. Mm-hmm. And so this fits in perfectly. And Intuition reached out. They have a partnership with the St. Augustine Amphitheater for the Sing Out Loud Festival. And each year they link to a local nonprofit. I think Jasmine had that honor a few years ago. And so this year it's us. And not only is Intuition linking, the amphitheater is linking as well. And one of the headlining bands, Parquet Courts, which is playing on the 18th, is actually sharing a portion of their proceeds with our St. John's office, St. John's Legal Aid as well. So we couldn't be happier. Again, we think we've hit our niche with sports, beer, and music. And this Intuition partnership is one of the coolest things we've ever done.
Now, Ben Davis, you have a tradition of doing this kind of thing at Intuition Aleworks. This is a really cool partnership. This is the Sing Out Loud Session IPA, a limited edition release that you are making available. How can people get a taste of this and support legal aid?
So it's available in our tap room in six packs and then also on draft. And then we also will be having it available in some accounts around town that we're still kind of working on. But it's similar to in years past when we've done this type of release where, you know, it's primarily available at the tap room.
Okay. And of course, your tap room is a must visit in downtown Jacksonville. You're also the first craft brewery in the state to can your beers. You've got this state-of-the-art facility and tap room. You've got a performance venue now as part of the complex. How do you see this latest venture as sort of supporting your overall efforts to be not only a thriving business, but also a good community partner?
You know, I think obviously with COVID and, you know, legal aid has served a purpose for a very long time, but I think that their services are much greater need during these kind of tough times with COVID and people's financial uncertainty. So, you know, it was a no-brainer for us to get involved with it. We have a great relationship with the St. Augustine Amphitheater. We've been partners with them for a couple of years now. And you know, as Jim said, I mean, it's fun, obviously, partnering with cool charities, but also, you know, being associated with music, too, because we're all big music fans at the brewery.
Sure. And Jim Kowalski, legal aid is so vital to this community right now, as Ben said, in the pandemic and also with moratoriums on evictions coming to an end. You're trying to provide any assistance you can in that area. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So part of our local economy, part of Florida's economy, this tourism and hospitality-based economy that we have is based on low-income workers. And we rely on them to fund this engine that we have that is the Florida economy and helps all of us not pay state income taxes. Well, those folks are often right at the edge. As the United Way ALICE study supports, we have an enormous amount of folks locally, 40%+, according to United Way, that don't make enough money for basic needs, right? Food, healthcare, transportation, childcare, technology, and housing. Housing is the biggest. We have a surprisingly high number of folks that pay more than 30% of their income for housing. And those folks are right on the edge. So we have a number of programs that have been put in place. We have programs that we've started. We're hosting FloridaEvictionHelp.org, which is a website that can be used throughout the state to build an eviction answer. And then we've been working with United Way and other partners to make sure that the federal money that's been made available to the counties and the states gets in the hands of the landlords, right? The landlords are another piece of this economic engine, and they have been going out without rent for some length of time because of the pandemic. The money's there. The programs need to get it to the landlords and work with our programs and other supportive programs to kind of fit these pieces of the puzzle together so that, as I started with, so that this economic engine continues to recover.
So check that out, FloridaEvictionHelp.org. And this is such an easy way to support Jacksonville area legal aid, Ben. People need to stop by Intuition Illworks and take a taste of this new Sing Out Loud Session IPA. I can't wait to try it myself.
Awesome. That's great beer. It's fun to make, you know, because it's what we call like a single hop, single malt. So it's one type of hop and then one type of malted barley. So it's kind of it's a fun beer from the brewing standpoint to make.
So visit Intuition, do what you can to support legal aid, and also make sure to check out the 5th Annual Sing Out Loud Festival this month with performances all around St. John's County. Thanks so much, Jim Kowalski, Jack's Area Legal Aid, and Ben Davis, Intuition Aleworks, on this innovative partnership, which will really do a lot to help this community. Cheers, guys, and thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, back in March, a barge carrying coal ash from Puerto Rico crashed into the jetties near the mouth of the St. John's River, dumping about 9,000 tons of coal ash into the water. While sediment and water samples collected a couple of weeks after the spill didn't indicate serious pollution, the incident still demonstrates the danger of transporting toxic waste on our local waterways. A coalition of groups around town say they have serious concerns about the risk posed to our beaches, the river, and people because toxic coal ash continues to be shipped through the Port of Jacksonville. These groups have launched a petition calling for the Jacksonville City Council and Mayor Lenny Curry to stop accepting toxic coal ash from Puerto Rico or anywhere else. For more on this, I spoke with riverkeeper Lisa Reinemann. So, Lisa, tell me about this situation, the toxic coal ash coming through our port and the concerns of your organization, the St. John's Riverkeeper.
Sure. So in March of this year, a barge carrying this coal ash from Puerto Rico crashed into the jetties near the mouth of the St. John's and unfortunately dumped nearly 10,000 tons of coal ash into the surrounding waters. It not only threatened the St. John's and our beaches, but also our thriving commercial seafood. And so this is just an example of what's at stake, because that just put a spotlight on this issue that we're importing toxic materials through the St. John's River numerous times every week, bringing tens and thousands of tons of this toxic waste into our watershed.
What can we do about this to better protect from something like this happening again?
Well, two things. First, we need to stop accepting this toxic material coming through our port. In 2017, Puerto Rico banned the disposal of this their own toxic waste in their landfills. They started shipping it to Osceola County and Central Florida, and Osceola County said, no, we don't want to take it. So now it's coming into Duval County. You know, it's coming 18 miles inland on the river. So first, we need to make a stand and ask our elected officials not to accept this waste. And then we need to look at ways to stop the production of coal ash, because not only are we importing this waste from Puerto Rico, you know, it's being produced right here in Jacksonville and other locations upstream on the St. John's River that's going into landfills, and it's not a sustainable practice long term.
Is this primarily JEA creating this coal ash?
Well, JEA, they do have a facility that creates coal ash, as well as other utilities like Seminole Electric and the Putnam County area, and there's several in Central Florida that do as well. And so we need sustainable solutions for not only now but for the future that don't produce these toxic materials that put our health as well as our environment in harm's way.
Okay, so you've compiled a coal ash fact sheet. You, along with the Northeast Florida Sierra Club and the Surfrider Foundation's First Coast Chapter, where can people go to learn more about this and maybe take action?
Most definitely, you can go to stjohnsriverkeeper.org, and we have a fact sheet that shows you why we're so concerned about this toxic material, as well as there's a link to a petition where you can sign the petition that we will be hand-delivering the results to the City Council and our mayor to ask them to take action to protect our community from the hazards of toxic coal ash.
Lisa Reinemann, the St. John's Riverkeeper, always good to talk to you. Thanks.
Thank you, Melissa.
Well, local author and journalist Julie Delagal has just published her debut novel. Scene tells the story of 15-year-old Jason Royals, whose future was there for the taking, but because he fit a description, it didn't happen. Julie Delagal on the line now. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. We must disclose that your husband's firm, Delagal & Poindexter, is a WJCT sponsor. You also do some editing work for them. So tell us how this book came together and what inspired it.
The book was inspired by a true story that occurred more than 20 years ago in Jacksonville. It's a famous story. I bet some of your listeners will recognize it if they read the book. And, you know, we have a reputation in Jacksonville. We have a defense bar, a criminal defense bar, that really steps up to the plate for children in our community. And they did just that during this case more than 20 years ago. But my book is completely fictionalized. The city is a fictional city called Beaureve. And, of course, southern towns are known for mispronouncing their own name.
Now, it is fictional, but is the story based on the Brenton Butler case, where a 15-year-old boy in Jacksonville was wrongly accused of murder? Is that the case that you use as your jumping-off point?
It's the case that inspired me. It really made an impression on me as a young mother back in 2000. My story begins in 2001. And again, it's completely fictional. But yeah, to witness a child really having his childhood, his young adulthood, interrupted in such a manner and taken away from him was heartbreaking to me.
Right. His story was actually told in a documentary film that won an Academy Award in 2002. So you're telling,
right,
you're basing this on a real story, but you create a fictional world too, right?
I do. Exactly right.
And what was that like as a writer to construct? How do you do that in a way that's convincing?
I was fortunate that I had a lot of flexibility with my time. Now, it took me a very long time to do it, but it was really interesting for me to sit down with these imaginary people in this imaginary town and hear them converse about what it might be like. And, of course, I can never, ever know truly what it's like, but I have been a witness, we all have, to things that have occurred all too often in our community. And I wanted to just explore that and to try to take different perspectives, not just Jason Royal's perspective, but also the perspective of the homicide detective who made a career-altering mistake.
Right.
In my book.
And these are issues which every city struggles with, but Jacksonville in particular, I think, has had a tough time dealing with issues of race and criminal justice. So is it your hope to illuminate that somewhat with this tale?
I hope to illuminate that. There are a lot of other themes in my book about family and faith and community, but justice is an overarching theme. And, you know, I think the thing that we have to remember in Jacksonville, and we don't always get it right, but there are a lot of people out there, whether activists marching in the streets or people sitting in negotiation rooms with the sheriff hammering out settlements like the ones we saw last year. You know, there are a lot of people working hard in Jacksonville, Florida to promote justice.
Now, your book, Scene, inspired by a true story, can be bought through pre-order at San Marco Books and More or your other favorite independent bookseller, as well as the national players. All author royalties from Julie's book sold between now and October 1st will be donated to the Literacy Alliance of Northeast Florida. How cool is that? And you're going to read at the upcoming 8th Annual Jacks by Jacks Writers Festival. Tell us about that.
I am thrilled to be included in that. I have been to, I think, every one of them for the past 8 years, and it's a really phenomenal experience. If you love the written word, if you love literature, stories, poetry, and particularly if you love Jacksonville, you won't want to miss it. It will be at the Jesse Ball DuPont Center on, I want to say, October 16th.
That's right. The 8th Annual Jacks by Jacks Writers Festival, Saturday, October 16th at the Jesse Ball DuPont Center. Hear Julie read from her debut novel, Scene. Pick it up at an independent bookstore, by the way. Support our local independent booksellers. Pre-order it now, maybe from San Marco Books and More or a wonderful store.
Chamblin's.
The bookstore out in the beaches and
the bookmark
would run by Rona, a wonderful lady. Order from a local independent bookstore. Author Julie Delegal, the book is called Scene. Congratulations and look forward to seeing you at the festival.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
Okay. In a moment, a recap of the Jaguars' first regular season game and the Saints Packers playing in town too. Our own Josh Torres takes us through all the weekend sports action right after this.
Ascension St. Vincent's. CARE is listening and delivering personalized plans from a team of specialists dedicated to providing the latest technology and treatment at every step. Information and appointments at getjackshealthcare.com. FSCJ Artist Series Broadway in Jacksonville presents Hamilton at the Times Union Center for a three-week engagement, September 29th through October 17th. Be in the room where it happens. More info at fscjartistseries.org.
Announcing Vickers Landing at Oak Bridge, bridging retirees with an all-new Ponte Vedra Beach community, featuring new homes, a resort lifestyle, and a life plan for every stage of aging. Information at vickerslanding.com.
WJCT Public Media and the Florida Theater presents Spirogyra, performing live at the WJCT Soundstage on Thursday, September 30th, 2021 at 7:30 p.m. Visit jacksmusic.org/events for tickets.
I'm Tanya Mosley. Video conferencing all day is more than just tiring, says one dermatologist. It's also causing something called Zoom dysmorphia.
With Snapchat dysmorphia, people knew that they were altering their appearance. But with Zoom dysmorphia, this seemed to be hitting in an unintentional way.
That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
President Biden's new vaccine mandate affects 100 million Americans.
This is not about freedom or personal choice. It's about protecting yourself and those around you.
But Republican governors are convinced it is about freedom and choice and say it won't hold up in court. That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, football season is officially underway. Unfortunately, the Jaguars didn't get off to the best start this weekend. Our director, Josh Torres, has some thoughts about that and some other games from over the weekend. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Melissa.
Okay, so the Jags taking on the Texans, but the Urban Meyer era, not off to the best start.
No, it was not. And if anybody was on Twitter yesterday, Jags fans were definitely letting the team hear about it. Yes, the Urban Meyer era it probably could have gone off to a worse start, but it definitely did not get off to a good start. They ended up losing 37-21 to a team that honestly a lot of people thought were going to be essentially tanking for the first overall pick and are now leading the division. Trevor Lawrence, he showed some promise. He went 28 for 51 for 332 yards. He threw three touchdown passes, but he also threw three interceptions. And there were a lot of times when it was very clear he was a rookie out there. The college game and the NFL game are two completely different monsters. He had a lot of times where he overthrew receivers. Receivers were dropping passes. The O-line was not doing very well. Defense looked just out of place. The team, yet again, one of the biggest issues we've had with them over the last few years, undisciplined, had 10 penalties. I think they had a couple illegal formations. They had too many men in the huddle. Just very basic penalties that an NFL team should not be getting. Just very disorganized. Definitely not a good look for Urban Meyer in his first NFL game. There's been a lot of talk coming out of the organization from sources saying that there's just a lot of dysfunction amongst him and his coaches and players. And this is just definitely not the look that the Jags wanted going into this season, a season that they thought was going to have a lot of promise with the first overall pick. And Jags fans definitely were not happy yesterday. But some of them are still showing a little bit of hope as the team's going to be traveling back to TIAA Bank Field right here on Sunday to take on the Broncos at 1 o'clock. And they're going to have a long week ahead of them to really study, find out what was going on, and really turn it around before this weekend, because I honestly, the vibe I was getting from Jags fans yesterday was they've just had enough.
They want to see some results.
I mean, that's just it. Like, you finally get the first overall pick every year. We are starting a new era. We're starting a new era. And Jags fans just feel like that era has never started.
Yeah. Well, let's hope for better. Speaking of the bank, while the Jags were away, the Saints and Packers came to town to play. Now, you were at this game, right?
Yes, I was. Where I got to see the Jacksonville Saints take on the Jacksonville Packers, as we're calling them. This was definitely a fun game to go to if you were anybody, except for if you were not a Packers fan, because the Packers got absolutely eviscerated. I have to say a quick apology to my mother, who is from Janesville, Wisconsin, and is a huge Green Bay Packers fan. Mom, right. I'm sorry, but the Packers got absolutely destroyed 38-3. Aaron Rodgers, the reigning MVP, threw two interceptions. They never got anything going. I mean, the Saints took absolute control. Former FSU quarterback and first overall pick from a few years ago, Jameis Winston, who had a rough time in Tampa Bay, got traded to the Saints. He threw five touchdown passes. This is a guy who a few years ago became famous for throwing 30 touchdown passes and 30 interceptions in the same season. He had five touchdown passes in one game.
Wow.
And it was just a shock to see the Packers and the Packers offense that dysfunctional.
You know, it was kind of funny too, listening to all the play by play and everybody commenting on how hot it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was at TIA Bank Field. Yeah, brutally hot. Okay, not much time left, but round us up on college football.
Yep, college football. We had a lot of teams who were playing what should have been tune-up games. There were two teams that definitely did not look like they were playing tune-up games, but we will get to them very shortly. The University of Florida played USF in Tampa. They won 42-20, but they might have a little bit of a QB controversy as backup quarterback Anthony Richardson stole the show again for the second week in a row. He went 3-for-3, throwing for 152 yards, two touchdown passes while also running for 115 yards and a touchdown. Their starter, Emory Jones, is not by any means really playing poorly, but he did go 14-for-22 for 151 yards and a touchdown pass, but also threw two picks. Their receiver, Jacob Copeland, also had five receptions for 175 yards and two touchdowns. So before this weekend, when they play Alabama, Dan Mullen's going to have a big question about who is he going to put in at quarterback. Let's go ahead and go over to Georgia. They took on UAB after taking down Clemson last week. They cruised to an easy 56-7 victory. Georgia quarterback went 10-for-12 for 288 yards and had five touchdown passes, and their defense forced three interceptions. I have to give a quick apology to Heather Schatz yet again. Miami nearly blew a game to Appalachian State, went into halftime down 14-12, but were able to come back and win 25-23, stopping a late App State charge. And the last game of the week, FSU took on Jacksonville State. The Miracle Man, Mackenzie Milton, got the start, but their game ended in heartbreak as the Seminoles lost on a last-second Hail Mary to lose to Jacksonville State 20-17, the first time they lost to an FCS team in program history.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't know that. Always so good to get your roundup on Mondays. Follow Josh on Twitter, too, at Josh is a polar bear. And thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks also for flying this plane every day. Josh is our show director. Thanks also to senior producer Heather Schatz, associate producer Catherine Hobbs, and editorial director Jessica Palumbo. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow, everyone. Have a great Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.